Hi, everyone. Welcome to Arts, Music, and Culture on Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm your host, Dave Custy. My guest today is writer Scott Meek. What's a mid-40s divorced man to do after wrapping up 20 years in the U.S. Navy? Why, start a career in teaching and writing, of course, and explore the world some more. And read everything possible and write several novels all at the same time. A teacher for the government by day, he plies his wares at night on his laptop, where he's cranking out silly blog posts, socio-political commentary, poetry, short stories, and novels at an excessive rate. If he was driving, he'd have been pulled over by now. Meanwhile, he has kids to raise, a girlfriend to love, and a spunky wiener dog named Sloppy Joe to goof around with. Beyond that, he's busy with life, having fun, working out, going to parties, traveling, etc., etc., etc. When he burns out and dies, he wants to be able to say that he did everything that was possible for him to do. Welcome, Scott, to Baltimore Internet Radio.
Hey, thanks.
Tell us a little bit about yourself in your own words. I know that was pretty complete what I just said, but go ahead.
trying to make the bio for all these different sites, or people always want a bio when they're trying to promote your books or something like that. You have to write something, and then you try not to sound like a jerk, like, oh, well, aren't I special? But really, most of that
it's a fine line, isn't it?
Yeah. Try not to be that wonderful. But I'm just trying to have a good time. I figure I'm only going to be here another 40 years or so. I'm going to try to get in everything that I possibly can.
That's an optimistic view. I like that, actually. Yeah. But tell us about your history, where you grew up and everything like that.
Well, I'm from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. People say that they can hear my southern accent, what's left of it, but I can't hear it. So I always kind of laugh when they say that. And my family all still lives there. I officially, as I like to say it, escaped in 1987 when I joined the Navy. And occasionally I go back and visit, although there's not that much of a connection there. I have much more connection here with my friends and my fiance now and her family.
Tell us about your Navy days.
Navy days, joining the Navy was absolutely the best thing that I ever did in my entire life. I needed to do something with myself. And so my uncle came by, and he was a Navy recruiter, and he said, hey, do you want to join the Navy? And I just looked at him and said, sure. So I joined. I went to be a Russian linguist. I thought this would be cool. I did language in high school, and I thought that was kind of fun and easy. And when I got out to Monterey, California, Russian was not an option because the old Soviet Union era was kind of fading away. And so they.
So what were we talking about in the early 90s, was this?
Late 80s. Yeah, so they were kind of. Knew something that they didn't, you know, before Glasnost. Maybe somebody knew something. So they put me into a Middle Eastern language. And my roommate and I had no idea what was going on with that. So we said, okay, cool, that'll be fun. And that worked out really, really well for me. The risk of saying, oh, Lauren, I'm wonderful, I'm really good at what I do. And so I stumbled into the perfect thing for me. And now, after applying the language for 20 years, now I teach people how to speak the language.
It's Russian language?
Oh, no.
Middle Eastern language, you said.
Oh,
so
yeah.
What is?
Yeah, Farsi.
Farsi, okay. Yeah. All right.
But my goal was I wanted to go learn Russian, and I wanted to go to Japan because we had a lot of people based in Japan, and I thought, oh, that would be so cool.
So they said, no Russian here.
Yeah.
Farsi. Learn it.
Yeah.
But you're happy you did.
Oh, absolutely. They said, oh, you can't go to Japan, but you can go to Maryland.
Wow. So which is the Farsi capital of the world.
Yeah, I've never been to Maryland before, so I thought, oh, that'd be okay. Yeah, that's cool. And then I just got on a plane a lot and went to the Middle East, went to Persian Gulf a lot.
Yeah. So that's what you did for your 20 years in the Navy?
Yeah, 13 trips to the Persian Gulf and a lot of time in Maryland and Georgia.
What places did you go? Persian Gulf.
We pull in. We were based out of Bahrain at the time. I'm not really sure what people are doing now, but I think they're probably still in Bahrain. Mm-hmm. And went to Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Ras Al Khaimah in the United Arab Emirates. And Dubai is like my favorite place in the world to go. Went to Kuwait several times right after the whole Iraq deal. So you could go around and the buildings were bombed out and stuff like that. But I mean, you could still go shopping and get some food or whatever. Been to Oman. The most beautiful Burger King in the entire planet is in Oman, in Muscat. And oh my God, it was gorgeous. And you're like, wow, I don't even want a Whopper, but I'm going to go in there.
What, in terms of architecture and stuff?
No, it was and this is the stupidest thing in the world, but the bathroom was like this magnificent blue marble. And it was like, never seen a bathroom like this before. You know, nobody has. And it was the bathroom. Yeah, I was like, oh my God. And then if you go, when McDonald's came to Bahrain, if you go in there, there's like 50 employees at all times. And, you know, we joke that, oh my God, it must be an entire Filipino village working here. Because, you know, those people come, especially from the Philippines and all around there, they come to the Middle East to be laborers, make a lot of money, and send it back to their families. Sure. So they can have a nicer life. You go in, there's four people at the door opening the door for you. There's 20 people behind the counter. There are four people cleaning the bathroom. You know, you can't even really get in there. Place is gorgeous, and it's clean, and you get your food in 5 seconds, even though you're at a McDonald's. Yeah. But, you know, every once in a while, you're like, ooh, that was new. Let's go check it out.
But how does the menu translate?
It's the same menu. I mean, they make Coke in Saudi Arabia, so they probably get all the food from Saudi Arabia, too. They probably has a whole factory there that does all its own stuff and just ships it out.
I want to digress a little bit because you mentioned Dubai, and I'm interested in Dubai. Being an internet radio station, and the first few months I've gotten pretty many inquiries from people in the Middle East and in Dubai and places like that to it. And I've just kind of taken a cursory look, and it looks gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. The thing is, when I used to go there in the early 90s, it was okay. You know, it was kind of eh. It hadn't really taken off as the banking center that it is now. So you would go. I was on a Royal Navy ship, and we just sat in Dubai for like 2 weeks. So I'd just get off the ship and walk around in my shorts and a T-shirt, which was you couldn't do when you were on a Navy, American Navy ship. You had to wear a collared shirt and long pants and look proper. But the British, they were like, whatever. So we would go there, and it was dusty, and there were a few nice places and a couple of nice hotels. But now it is unbelievable. Everything is gorgeous. They have man-made islands. And when you watch the Dubai Classic golf tournament, that is all man-made. They spend billions just on watering the lawn because it is green everywhere. And it is not supposed to be green.
No, I wouldn't think so. Desert country.
No.
So tell me more about that 20 years in U.S. Navy. What's some of your high points there?
I had a few really cool experiences. For instance, after a couple of tours here in Maryland, I transferred down to Georgia, to our area down there where we did the same thing, deployed out of there. And I moved into this new office, and I walked in, and basically it was a big room with modular furniture and a chair. And they said, welcome aboard, Petty Officer Meek. This is your new office. So I was the first person stationed there to deploy out of there. And we didn't even have a pencil. So I had to go around and like scavenge supplies. And then like weeks later, we got computers. And then we started getting chairs. And then we started getting people. So I had the opportunity to start up things literally from the ground floor more than once during my time in the Navy, including building a course of instruction. It was 19 weeks long, and that was the second time, like 5 years later, that I walked into a room which we had absolutely nothing except three modular workstations and three chairs. And it was like, okay, make it happen, which is cool because I operate really well in that environment.
So what did the work involve? If you had three chairs or something, so you had three people there and you were teaching them Farsi and such?
No. Our job at that point was we didn't even have a course. They said, go make us a course. I'm like, I don't even have a computer, dude. So then we have to do that. And then I've been doing this long enough that I'm like, okay, let's start with what our objectives are. And I never really had any formal training. Some people are teachers and some people aren't. That's the way I've always looked at it. I was like, okay, let's figure out what our objectives are. What is our testing going to be like? And then let's look at what kind of things we're going to create. And as far as lessons go, and I had an opportunity to work with two other people that were with me in that we wanted to think way out of the box. Let's do things that nobody else does in class. Let's create opportunities for people to work together where you have to, like you do when you deploy. You work as a team. One guy's checking the radar, one guy's checking messages, one guy's doing this, and then you kind of put it all together. I was like, well, let's do that. We have the guy that has raw data, this guy's checking messages, this guy gets radar information, and then we have a supervisor behind him putting it all together so that he can inform the tactical action officer that XYZ is happening or not happening, that everything is cool, or that maybe we're in trouble, or we probably shouldn't be here, or something like that. So we went out that way. That was a really cool experience, just because we started out with an empty room. I left out of there and came up here with what turned out to be a really good course for a couple of years.
So you created the template for this course, and is it still going on today?
No, because it was 19 weeks long, and that's something right there. You know, I mean, that's a long time. But really, it turned out to be people just couldn't let their people go for that long.
Mm-hmm.
And it just cost too much money to send people there temporarily to go over the course, just stay in a hotel and there's food and all that stuff. So I think that's the main reason. But the course itself, it was great. From what I understand, it worked out really well. And I only kind of conceptualized it and set things up. And then I let other people take it on as I moved, when I moved up here. But that's just one of those little things that I did that I thought was, that was actually a pretty cool thing.
It does sounds like it.
Yeah. And I had a really good time doing that because I like to create stuff all the time.
So anything else that stand out in your Navy career?
I got to travel around a little bit and go places. I got to live in California twice, you know, for a year at a time. In Monterey.
Ooh, the north.
Yeah.
And lovely up there.
And Monterey is absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And it is, you know, like San Diego is 75 in the summer and 75 in the winter. And it's in Monterey, it's like sweatshirt and shorts all year round.
Mm.
You probably run your heat at night, every night, even in July. Then you come out a couple of hours and the fog burns off and then it's beautiful and just a little windy. And oh my God, it is so green. It's like going to Seattle, but it's not raining all the time. If you've ever been to Seattle? Yeah, I've been to Seattle.
No, I haven't, but I lived in Northern Ireland, so that's like Seattle.
Yeah, yeah. And that might be one of the coolest things about having been in the Navy is I got to go everywhere. I mean, my ex-wife and I, when I was married then, we took vacations. We went places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody else was going to visit their family. Oh, I'm going back to Tennessee, hang out with my parents. I'm like, they were like, where are you going? I'm like, we're going to Chicago. I'm like, why? Because we've never been there. Yeah, I've never been to Chicago. And we're going to Seattle. We go to San Diego. And we go to Vancouver. And we go to Toronto. Well, what'd you go there for? Because to look around. You know, we go for 3-4 days and come home. It was cool.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to go do that. Explore America. I've seen a lot of America. I've seen quite a bit.
Let's bring it up to current days.
Okay.
Did 20 years in the Navy jettison to your current position? You like that jettison?
Yes, absolutely. Good nautical term.
Yeah,
it did. It rolled right into that. I did what a lot of people do in the intelligence community is they do their last 3 years up here at Fort Meade, and then they roll right into a contracting or government job.
Mm-hmm.
And I pretty much did that.
So you're now at the NSA.
Yeah.
Can I say that louder? No.
Sure. I mean, I'm wearing the hat. I brought it with me anyway.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Okay. I like wearing it around, and people are like, hey, where'd you get that hat? And I'm like, at work. And then they don't ask any more questions.
Oh, I see. But,
yeah, it's kind of funny. Yeah, I mean, heck, we got a website, and so I think it's kind of funny. And there's a children's page, too.
Is that real?
Oh, yeah, there is. It's really funny. My kid wants to work with me. He's like, I can't wait till I get old enough, graduate from college, and work with you, Dad. I'm like, okay, that's cool. It's a great job, man. You're looking and going in the right direction.
So what is it, if you could tell me, what do you do with the NSA?
We do a lot of things that we can't talk about.
Really?
Yeah.
Well.
Because I like my job and I want to keep it. And
so when you get home and you have things to say, and your girlfriend says, how was your day? And you just say, fine.
That's pretty much the way
the world is still here.
That's right. I said, you know, some people were annoying. You know, I sat at my desk. I did some stuff. And then I'm like, what did you do today, honey? And she's like, oh, I did this. And then she tells me.
And I went on Facebook. And
I did that. I got important things to do.
That's right.
Facebook updates. Got to promote my book. Promote Baltimore with my little Baltimore-y Facebook page.
How did this manifest itself into your writing career?
The whole job thing, all that stuff, didn't have anything to do with it at all. I used to write a little bit. I know, but I do have a story.
Good.
But it really didn't have anything to do with it at all.
That far off.
No. But there's something that you couldn't possibly know was when I got divorced, that's what started my writing career.
Okay.
So I got divorced about 10 years ago. And when you move to a new state where you don't know anybody and you leave your wife and your kids are left behind as well, because that's just kind of how things work out. And you start all over again, and it's really hard. You got to deal with that somehow. Some people deal with it poorly, and I can't say that I was the best at it, but I did, for some reason, start writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I started a blog when back in the MySpace days, and I used to write about what it was like to have lost your family and kind of not have anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just see your entire life just go away. And that connected with a lot of people, and that got me into poetry and short stories. Some of my early short stories are really angry, lots of people die, but I needed to get that out somehow.
So, but you never had any predilection to write before this?
No, I did in high school. I think I ended up writing some silly story that was about 100 pages, and my house burned down when I was 17, so anything that I created back then, I used to be quite an artist. I wrote, draw a lot. I drew a lot. All that stuff went away. So I kind of reset, and then I joined the Navy, and then I got divorced, and I reset. And now I work during the day, and I write almost every night.
Very good. So tell me about what you write currently. I know we'll get to the Sesame Swallow area, but first, you say you write blogs, and just tell me more in detail about that.
Yeah, I have a... I've been keeping it for a while. It's readingwritingrevolution.net, and you know, there's a lot of socio-political stuff. Some things make me angry, and I figure, well, I'm just going to sit down there and write about it. But it's really hard to keep up a blog. I mean, I guess some people have all the time in the world, but I'm trying to write novels too, and I'm trying to read other people's work and help them with it, and I have all these other things going on, so I'm trying to find time to read, so it's really hard to keep up with. But I write a lot of political commentary, and I write about life, and I write about, I put silly stuff in there sometimes. Mm-hmm. All my short stories are on there. I kind of recycle them through because I'm so busy writing novels now, I don't write any more short stories. Excerpts from novels and maybe just sometimes just pictures or videos and a little commentary. Just kind of keep things going.
Okay, well, let's delve into Sesame Swallow. Tell me about the derivation of her.
Okay, well, Sesame started not this last November, but the November before. National Novel Writing Month is in November, and the goal is to write 50,000 words, which is about 150 pages, in 30 days. And that takes a huge time commitment. You're going to write approximately 1,600 words every night. You got to make some aspects of your life go away. You know, I can't watch TV anymore. I can't do this. I can't do that. I had that silly first couple of lines just pop into my head one day, and I said, okay, this is going to be my book. I didn't have a plan for it at all. And I think it kind of shows a little bit, but I just went for it, and I thought it was going to be a one-off. You know, I'll just write something silly and crazy and ridiculous. And that stupid 50 Shades of Grey crap makes everybody so happy. Maybe I'll write my own little 50 Shades of Grey, but from a woman's standpoint, and maybe I'll just for the hell of it, I'll try to see if I can include sex in every chapter. I tried that, but at the end it got really serious, so I couldn't do that. I actually had a story to finish, you know.
It's funny how that turns out that way.
Yeah, it actually turned into a real story, and I got kind of serious with it, which I usually do. But it's very different for me because I have written erotica or sexual content before, I've never really tried to write anything that was kind of funny or offbeat. And this time, I've been living in the city for 10 years now, and I have seen Sesame Swallow at the point where she was a disaster. And she's a Baltimore party girl who drinks too much, who fools around, who is always at the bar. And I've met so many people that are like that. Mm-hmm. And not to knock them, hey, if that's your thing, for it. But I just wanted to have fun with it and make, you know, have kind of a parody and do silly things. And
Give us a synopsis of what ventures or misadventures she gets in on Sesame Swallow, Private Investigator, a novel.
So Sesame has just been sitting around her office, and she takes those cheesy cases. Oh, my boyfriend's cheating on me. Go take pictures of him. Follow him around. Oh, my wife is cheating on me. So she's all these crap cases that no private eye ever really wants to have, you know, almost like an ambulance chaser. And she's young. She's in her mid-20s, and she's got a degree, and she couldn't get into forensics, which is what she wanted to do. She's just kind of waiting for the big case to land in her lap, and it does. The only problem is she doesn't have a clue how she's actually supposed to pursue a real private eye case, which reflects totally the fact that I don't read mysteries. I'll be the first one to tell you. So I have no clue how to write a mystery. I learn as I go. That's what I do. So Sesame and I were both kind of learning, okay, what would we do next? In the modern world, I can't read Nancy Drew books because that was in 1950. I don't have time to read Laura Lippman as much as I'd like to. I have some of her books, but I don't have time right now because I'm in National Novel Writing Month. I got to get this novel written in 30 days. I am actually finally going to get this done. And I did. Mm-hmm. So that was very cool. So she and I both kind of just stumbled through it. And she does all the things that she normally does. She parties a little too hard. She gets way too drunk on Johnny Walker Black, which is her drink of choice. Mm-hmm. She wears her cute little dresses, and she runs around, and she actually ends up in a case that she totally didn't expect, and it's much more serious than she thought. She wasn't taking it seriously, but she was like, oh, well, I'll get this done, no big deal. And it gets really serious at the end, and she almost doesn't pull through.
That's quite a good teaser there. I like that. So.
Yeah. But the good thing is, at first, you may not have any respect for her at all because you're like, oh, whatever, she's like a floozy or a bimbo or she's a silly drunk girl. If you look at some female characters who are maybe not even in the forefront, maybe they're not Ripley from Aliens, you know, maybe they're in the background. But a lot of those people, like, let's say she's very quiet, but she's got that quiet strength, determination, and they keep going forward and they keep trying. And at the end, Sesame really comes out that way. Yeah, she's still drinking and having a good time.
She got sick to it.
She stuck to it and she toughed it out and she was brave when it counted. And in a lot of ways, I kind of am proud of her because of that.
So how do we get this book?
Well, it's on Amazon. That's the major way to get everything, of course, nowadays. And you can get it on paperback or ebook. If you get the paperback, then you get the ebook for free. If you're, you know, like to have a little every version of everything, or I prefer paperbacks. I hate reading ebooks. I only
but
get
hey,
them.
It is the season. So this
absolutely.
Is this is your summer beach reading, right?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can read that in a weekend, easy, and just have a good time with it and laugh about it. And there's a lot of commentary about it on my blog, because I write about I got some bad reviews. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I got some great reviews, especially from people who live in Baltimore and they know that kind of girl. Mm-hmm. But I got some bad reviews from people I think were probably like suburban housewives or something like that. And they were like, oh, who is this? What's wrong with her? Or what's wrong with this author? And I was like, well, you just don't understand the situation.
They were just expecting harlequin romance.
They were. And then, you know, he was sweaty and blah, blah, blah. I don't have time, but I don't write like that. I'm not like that.
All right, so Jacqueline Suzanne, you're not.
Yeah, no. No, this is more in your face.
Okay.
Yeah, but my friends who live around here, the women, they totally approved. They thought it was hilarious and funny, and they can't wait for the next one to come out.
So that's a good segue.
Yeah.
What's happening now?
So
What are you writing?
I am writing, among other things, but primarily I'm concentrating on Sesame Swallow and The Case of the Missing Heart. So again, like I told you, this is going to be a one-off, and I was just going to do one and go on to something else. But I kind of decided I liked her. So in this next book, I've kind of dialed it back a little bit. It's not going to be as ridiculous and just raunchy sex left and right. She's going to become a real character now, a real person who has real things to deal with. And one of the things is a very close friend of her gets murdered, or maybe it's a suicide because that's the way it looks. Mm-hmm. Only there's something not quite right. So she's got to go figure out what it is, something to do with a missing heart. And she's actually going to get into a point now where she's actually got to be a little sleuthy and get out there and figure things out.
A missing heart. Do you literally a missing heart?
Or? No, not literally. Okay. No. No. But, but you know, I had no idea what it was going to be called.
Yeah,
and as I'm writing, I was like, do. I was like, oh, that's perfect. And as soon as you read like the third chapter or whatever, you'll go, oh, okay, now I know why it's called this.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so she actually kind of rounds up a couple of other girls about her age. They have different skill sets. And it's not really a Charlie's Angels kind of thing. I never really watched Charlie's Angels when I was younger, although I'm old enough to have been around then. But it's kind of like that, you know. She's the sleuth.
So what age is she?
She is like 27.
Okay.
Yeah. No training. She doesn't carry a gun. She can't beat up 12 people, you know, that kind of thing. But she can look really great.
She uses her wits, though.
That's right. She's smart and she's determined. And I think she's getting a lot more confidence in herself.
Does she have a sister?
We haven't come up with
that.
Does
she have a pension? That's what I'm looking for now.
Yeah.
A little too old for her.
Yeah, really. But I don't know. I haven't really gotten into her family yet. She's kind of a loner, and I think I might keep her that way because I have familiarity with that, so I can write that side of it pretty well.
Talking about a series, then.
I think so.
Do you like her well enough to keep going?
Absolutely, because I've already written out the next book in my head. I've already got it plotted out. Yeah, and that one's going to have to do with an old woman who hears some noises on her second floor of her house, but she's too old and she can't get up there anymore. She's just a little too old and her husband has just died. So Sesame is like, okay, whatever, I'll go look. And they find a little girl who's old enough to be able to speak but can't really. And so then they have to go, oh, where'd this little girl come from? And I have a whole plan for where that story goes already.
All right, and that's number three.
That's number three. That'll be in this November. I'll write that in 30 days.
Okay, and then number two, when is that going to be finished?
That my plan is for that to be out on like June the 1st.
Okay. We're recording this on April 22nd, so
yeah.
It's a lot of pressure, dude.
Oh, no. I'll be done. I'll be done with my edits in a week, and I'll give it to like four or five people to read and give me some feedback, and then I'll fix it again. And it's self-publishing, and I have a person that does all the setup, and I have a person that does the cover. So no problem.
So what would you like to do in pursuing of marketing it? Would you like to go to book festivals and take it around the world and such?
I think it would be pretty cool to actually get a booth maybe at the Baltimore Book Festival. Yeah. I think that'd be pretty cool.
That's September, is it?
Right? September, yeah. Yeah, and I know Greg Wilhelm, he's a City Lit guy. So I know a few people that can probably, you know, point me in the right direction. So that would be cool. But, you know, I figure after I write four or five of these, maybe she'll get a little popular.
So we talked a bit about it, the next chapters of your Sesame Swallow life. Mm-hmm. What else do you think is going to happen to you in the next 3 months to like 5 years?
3 months to 5 years.
I know this is a tough one, but I always ask for people.
No, that's cool. No, like I said, we're planning on moving, and we're looking at places. We may move three blocks.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you thinking about still staying in Baltimore proper?
Oh, yeah, we're not going
maybe
anywhere.
Going to,
I'm staying
in Hyattsville or something.
I can't do my job anywhere else. Rachel is very happy at Hopkins, or maybe she'll look at something at Shock Trauma. It's all right here.
But it doesn't take you that long to get to Fort Meade, does it?
Oh, no, it's 20 minutes to get there, yeah. And we live next to a great park, which is one of the top 10 parks in the United States, inner city parks. And I don't want to move away from the park. I really don't.
Patterson Park. Let's give it a plug because I live on Patterson Park Avenue. So
yeah, it is terrific.
It is.
And I really like living next to that park.
You could probably get some good Sesame Swallow ideas there, too.
It could, I'm sure.
Just from the runners.
That's true. Yeah. Well, actually, they do end up in Patterson Park in the next book. Very briefly. I like to write about things that I know.
How I can get that out of you.
And then people have said several times, they're like, oh, it's really cool to see her go places that I know, that I recognize.
That's familiar with, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, yeah, really, I enjoy that when I read like some Tom Clancy books and he talks about being in Baltimore or D.C. because I know where those places are, you know, that kind of thing. So we're probably going to move. Both my kids will have graduated from high school by the end, so I don't know. Who knows what they're going to do.
But you still write. I think of departing away from Sesame Swallow, there'll be others.
Oh, no, I have several novels already in the works and two of them that are finished that I'm going to be doing some editing on as soon as I'm done with this new Sesame Swallow book. It's called Dying Light, and it's a vampire.
Comedy?
No, it's a sci-fi vampire thriller that takes place in Baltimore in the 24th century.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds interesting. You know what I think would be cool? It just came to me is to get a forum together of all Baltimore writers that write about Baltimore. So is there anything else you want to add there, Scott?
No, you know, I'm just enjoying my time in Baltimore, and I'm trying to not only, promote my stuff a little bit, but I'm also trying to promote other people's stuff, people that are doing things here, like you with your internet radio thing.
I appreciate that.
I don't mind stepping in with a couple of dollars or sending somebody to the right person or suggesting someone to say, hey, this person or this thing can help your own dream come true. I'm taking care of my dreams, and I'm hoping maybe to help out other people get theirs done too.
So this is an obvious question because you're going to buy a house here, but do you think in the foreseeable future you'll stick around Baltimore?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We have no plans to go anywhere, and I like living here because we can walk everywhere and do everything we want right here. There are so many things to do.
And especially around here.
This year our goal is to try to get out of the city because we have so much fun in the city. We never go anywhere else. You know, we don't go to – I've never even been to Ocean City.
No?
During the summer.
Maryland. Never. I must tell you, you have a great radio voice, so you might want to consider doing a show here or doing – well, see, the thing is, what I want to do, too, is radio plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I have the old style type of radio plays with the sound effects and things like that. But you have a terrific voice.
I know.
But just a little bit of a southern twang that I hear, a little bit of Faulkner in there.
Okay. Oh, that would be cool. I'm open to all kinds of things. I have lots of ideas. I want to write a play. I want to write songs. I want to write music. One day I'm going to get a piano on how to play it.
I want to write a musical myself, too.
I absolutely. I have a whole idea for a musical. I'll tell you about it
sometime soon. Yeah, sounds great. Yeah.
It's going to be hilarious.
But you got a lot of things in the fire that's terrific. So that means, of course, this is just an introductory. That means you'll come back.
Oh, absolutely.
And keep us apprised for a long time, I hope.
Oh, totally.
Because I hope to be here a long time myself.
Cool.
Any contact information you'd like to give out to the people?
We can follow me on Twitter at DSMeek36, and I have an author page on Facebook, and Sesame Swallow has her own page on Facebook if you want to be friends with her. Rachel's going to be taking over the Facebook page, start a Tumblr, and she's already kind of running the Twitter page for Sesame Swallow, at Sesame Swallow, so I think it's going to get a lot more interesting and a lot girlier. It's not easy pretending to be a girl on the internet so that my characters look like they're, you know,
authentic.
Yeah. It's like she keeps telling me, and that's one of the things is I have her double check everything. Like,
would she really do this?
She wouldn't really say that, or she wouldn't wear those shoes, or we don't call them yoga pants. We call them stretchy pants. I was like, oh, what, you know, I don't know that.
Yeah. So, that's good.
Yeah.
You have that kind of semi ghostwriter behind you.
That's right. Yeah. My double checker.
Well, thanks for being here on Baltimore Internet Radio. I've been talking to writer Scott Meek on arts, music, and culture here on Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm your host, Dave Custy. We'll see you.